This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm excited today to be joined by Dr. Mike Hughes, Michael Hughes. He's the president, CEO of the Suma Barberton Campus, Health Campus, Hospital System. Dr. Hughes, can you take a moment to introduce yourself? Then I'll talk to you about COVID-19, about strategy, about priorities, and more. And thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much, Scott. I appreciate the opportunity to participate with your podcast. I'm an interventional cardiologist by training. I practiced interventional cardiology for almost 25 years in the Akron, Ohio area. I led a 23-person cardiovascular group. We actually merged with another group back in 2007 here in town, and then transitioned to an employment model. I attained my MBA in 2012 and led the Cardiovascular Institute at Summa Health from 2014 through 2016, and then assumed the president's position at Summa Barberton Hospital Campus in 2016. I'm also the president of the Cardiovascular Service Line as a senior administrator over that service line. You know, the COVID thing has turned our world upside down, just like it has many others. But it has also opened up some great opportunities. And I look forward to kind of talking you through some of the things that we've identified that we want to leverage going forward as we come out of this COVID pandemic.
Well, thank you. And before we do that, take a moment and talk about the transition from, you know, full-time practicing interventional cardiologist to health system leadership and administrative leadership and just leadership. I mean, you've always been a leader, but talk about the movement between professional practice and health system leadership.
Yeah, it's first off, I was scared to when I made that decision to make that move. It was a little bit of an anxiety-provoking time in my life, although one of my patients probably spurred me along more than anything else. And I was sitting in the office one afternoon talking to this gentleman, and, you know, he looked me in the eyes and he said, you know, Doc, you saved a lot of lives in the cath lab one at a time. But if you take your abilities and put that into a position where you can influence so many other physicians, think of the multitude of lives that you'd be able to impact by doing the right thing and driving working relationships and collaboration and the things that you've always tried to do in your private practice. And honestly, that was one of the driving forces that made me make the jump, is that I did want to make a difference. Barberton is a unique situation in that it is a community hospital, it's part of a larger hospital system, which is Summa Health. And Barberton has always been a community hospital. This is a smaller hospital. We have about 250 licensed beds. And I just really, I fell in love with this hospital when I came here to practice in 2008. And it's very similar to the hometown I grew up in Anderson, South Carolina, in that the geographic location is totally different, Northeast Ohio versus Western South Carolina, but the socioeconomic status is almost identical. And I really felt like I was able to give back to a community that's very similar to the one I grew up in. And that is very professionally satisfying, that I honestly believe that I've been able to make a difference. We've made some great strides in developing community relationships and in building new programs. I've evolved the hospital itself into a more focused, ambulatory focus type access point for the community here. So I do think that I have been able to make a difference, and that's what gets me up in the morning. If I feel like I can make a difference, then I'm all for it and trying to go after everything I can. So that piece of it is scary getting out of my comfort zone. I was very good at what I did in the cath lab. I love doing it, and I miss it. I miss that taking care of those acute heart attacks when they roll in the door. I don't miss taking care of them at 2 a.m. and having to get up and work all day the next day. So that part of it has been somewhat good, but it is, there are great things about being an interventional physician, as well as there are great things about being an administrator with a physician and clinical background. I think that gives me a unique credibility with a lot of the staff and with the other physicians in particular. But you have to build that trust to when you move from those two different areas. You can be trusted as an interventional cardiologist, but when you move into the administrative position, you got to re-earn that trust from a different perspective. And I think that is something that, that I've been able to navigate fairly well. And I'm very proud of the things that we've been able to accomplish here. A lot of the folks that I have that are working with me now, I have worked with in the past in various different career paths we have crossed. And so there's a familiarity there with each other. And I think that makes a big difference, too, as far as getting things done and being nimble and making decisions and getting things moving and keeping things moving. So does that help?
Thank you. 100%. Let me ask you two quick questions as follows. One is, you know, back in the day when I was a young professional, I was not a physician, obviously, but worked with a lot of physicians. And there was this real us versus them position amongst physicians and hospital leaders. That seems to have become less so the last 20 years or so. You know, but was there a feeling of, you know, when you change from being a physician full time and you'll always be a physician to being a hospital leader, that you were changing teams at all? Or was it a naturally easy transition?
For me, it was naturally easy. And I think others, though, that I have seen have struggled with that transition. I look at it as a personal relationship first, and then you figure out. I think a lot of it has to do with transparency, too. If you put the cards on the table in front of people and you talk to physicians as the smart, entrepreneurial bent type people that most of the independent physicians are this day and time, they respect you and they will listen to you. So I think having that insight and that emotional intelligence to be able to ascertain what's going on in a meeting, I think that goes a long ways toward helping build those relationships. And that's what it's about, is the building that trust. It can be daunting, though. Yes.
And let me ask you another question. You hear so much about physician burnout today, and rightfully so. Almost anybody that does think the stress level consistently for 30-plus years hits that burnout or has trouble, or most people do. Do you think the career transition from practicing physician full-time to leadership helped you keep things interesting, helped you evolve and grow yourself?
Well, I've always been one that loved to learn. I mean, I have to credit my wife with me going back and getting my MBA, because when I was running our 23-man group, I mean, I was reading as much business material and, you know, business books around management styles and trying to self-educate around how to better manage our group. And she, she sat me down. I never forget, it was one Sunday night, and she sat me down and says, "Listen, you're spending all this time. You don't have a real structured format of how you're going to get this done and how you're going to learn these things. Why don't you go back and get into a program where you get an MBA, you get some street credit in the business arena then, because you've got the papers to prove that you went back, you studied, and you tried to master this. Then you'll be able to sit at the board table. People will respect you. They'll have an understanding of what it is they need to see and what it is that you have that you can better explain to them what it is your clinical expertise can offer in various settings." And she was very right on. And I finished my MBA in 2012. And it was, you know, when I first started, I have to tell you, a lot of the stuff that we did, I had never done any type of business formal education at all. It had all been science from the first day I started in college until you know, that point in time. And to start out with some of the, what I used to call the touchy-feely things, to looking at yourself, evaluating your own personality traits, learning how to evaluate what others are thinking of you, and trying to figure out the setting and what's going on in a meeting, and just more than anything, understanding more about myself and my own motivations and how to address those. I learned more about myself in those 2 years than ever before. And some of it is because that I was in a more mature stage in my life. I know I understand that piece of it. But I also learned about things about what makes me tick and what makes me work. And I think that going into that and doing that MBA was extremely beneficial to me. When I first started, it was like, oh no, I got to write another paper about this. By the end of it, I was looking so forward to going to those classes and meeting with my teammates. And, you know, to this day, it's been 8 years. We still, two or three of us, stay in touch with each other at least once or twice a week. It was fun, and I love to learn, but I learned so much about myself doing that. And it doesn't have to be an MBA. There are other types of business type courses that people can take, but I credit my wife with charging me with doing that and making a difference. And I did that for 2 years while I was practicing full time as an interventional cardiologist. And it wasn't easy on me or my family life, but it was well worth it, I have to tell you.
I bet. That's fantastic. Let me ask you one final question. Talk to us a moment about COVID-19 and things that the system is getting better at because of it, or lessons from it. Anything you could add there?
Yeah, so a couple of things, just some bullet points. You probably heard this from other folks as well, but you know, the COVID-19 has really revealed some discrepancies in access to care, especially in some of our more vulnerable populations. We have a large Nepalese population here in the Akron area and Barberton area, and you know, multi generations live in the same house. We have, you know, the individuals of color. We've got group homes. We've got extended care facilities. There are a lot of discrepancies in our abilities to take care and manage a pandemic like this have been uncovered. You know, we actually had a complete shutdown of our ambulatory surgery for 2 months, and that had a significant bottom line impact. We furloughed about 600 people at the peak of our furlough. We are now recalling many of those. The other thing that we saw is a 28% drop in our acute heart attacks coming to the hospital. Nationally, it's somewhere between 30 and 40%, depending on what data you look at, that are deferring care, cardiovascular care due to COVID fear. And for a new cancer diagnosis, it's as much as 45% drop in new cancer diagnosis, and stroke is down about 30% across the nation. So the one thing that, you know, that has had a significant financial impact on our situation here, on our organization. We're about a $1.4 billion organization, and we're looking at about a $48 million projected forecasted loss for the end of the year. We also, you know, what we've done to try to mitigate that is a lot of the people that we're hearing as far as coming back are afraid to come back to the hospital because they're afraid of catching COVID in the hospital. And we've been very intentional about getting in front of the media, doing radio talk shows, having marketing on TV and radio about public service announcements that it's safe to return to the hospital for care. We're practicing social distancing. We're doing hand washing. Everyone has to wear a mask that comes in the door. I mean, in our area here, it's a lot safer to come to the hospital than it is to go to the grocery store. Because if you think about it, in the grocery store around here, 50% of the people wear a mask. Everybody's touching all the vegetables and fruit and everything. And then you're going in there and touching them and picking them up again. And it's just a lot safer to be in the hospital where everybody's mandatory to wear a mask than it is to be, you know, in the grocery store. We are also looking at, as we reopen, you know, we identified some gaps in coverage, and we've been listening to the community, been listening to our patients and our providers and some of the, and our staff, our employees as well. We're trying to access the needs in both of the organization, the needs of the community, and, you know, what do our providers need? Because they got hurt really bad with people not coming to the office, and this COVID thing really hit a lot of people. So we're trying to listen to people, figure out what it is we can do to work with them, to help them. One of the things that I will tell you that we have learned is that telemedicine is going to be here to stay. And depending on how the regulatory situation falls out over the next several months, we'll tell the tale of how much penetration is going to be with telemedicine long term. But some of the things that we're dealing with, we have, as a lot of hospitals do, difficult times getting neurologists or an ophthalmologist or some other subspecialties to come to the hospital to see patients. Are they stretched so thin they come once a day, and if somebody comes in right after they leave, then they're here 2 days before they get seen. And we're looking at, and we have been using during COVID, iPads to do telemedicine and real-time consults on the inpatients with specialists that are away from the hospital, that are outside the hospital. And it has markedly improved the efficiency of care and, I believe, improved the level of care that our patients are receiving. So there are some things with telemedicine that we are looking to incorporate. Another example is pre-surgical testing. A lot of times when the patient comes in for pre-surgical testing, they come up with an abnormal EKG or they complain of some chest pains. Well, that's an automatic cancellation of the surgery. They get sent home. They call the primary care physician. They got to try to get in to see a cardiologist to get cleared. You're talking about 2 or 3 week delays. What we've done is implemented a real-time consult. So if a need for a pre-op clearance occurs, they pick up the phone and call the cardiologist, and they do a real-time hookup, pre-admission testing hookup with a physician's assistant or doc who's doing the pre-admission testing, and they do the consult right then with the patient and the person that's making the request for the consult. You make a decision, can they be cleared or not? And if they can't, what testing needs to be done? It gets ordered, it gets followed up, and the patient's taken care of without ever having to go into an office. And they can be cleared in a matter of days instead of 3 or 4 weeks sometimes. So there are a lot of good things, I think, that we can learn from this COVID experience that we had to use, because telemedicine was, people were getting into it kicking and screaming because it was different. It was new. But when they had no other option, they learned how to use it. And now we're learning how to expand the use to make it more efficient, to provide more efficient care for patients and get them through the system in a more economical way than having multiple doctor's visits to get somebody cleared for surgery. That's just one example. And there are others that we've come up with as well.
That's fantastic. I tell you, it's a fascinating story that you hear across the country that on COVID-19 and the different ways it impacts different families, different socioeconomic groups. Like you talked about the Nepalese in your area who live in multi-generational houses, much more spread, many more challenges, different issues. It's really fascinating to see how these things impact different people differently, and also how it impacts practices differently. If you're a proceduralist, we're basically out of business for a few months and now sort of ramping back up. I want to tell you, Dr. Hughes, a remarkable professional journey. It is great to get a chance to visit with you today. We're on with Dr. Hughes, president of the SUMA Barberton Hospital System or Health Campus in Ohio. And just a great pleasure visiting with you today, Dr. Hughes. Thank you very much.
And thank you. I appreciate the time and I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.